There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to check in with y'all. Got a great week ahead, and it's good. It's sunny outside. Yeah, it's because it's, you know what, Sunday was all right too, but it's a work day, so things get cleared up out there. All right, coming up on today's show, my buddy Sergeant John Young is going to join me a little after 12:30. Plus, we'll delve into the helicopter crash. I don't believe it's a Franz Ferdinand moment, but it does bring up a discussion of kind of the two-track government of Iran, like the, when I say secular, kind of secular adjacent government in Iran, and then, of course, the religious government there. And maybe there may be more at foot than just outside pressures going on here in Iran. So we'll talk about that coming up later on in the show. Also, as I start the show, I'm back and forth on the text line, which is 343-0106, 343-0106. Do I go to a text here from Ricky telling me about he's back with the guillotines, 30,000 guillotines set up in FEMA camps. That's a classic, Ricky. You were sending me that back in the day. You said that I would be led to the guillotine. Or Michael, who's showing me pictures from this weekend's wooden boat show on the causeway. I think I'm going to go to the wooden boat show text-wise, but we'll talk about that in just a little bit. Right now, let's check in with a man who at least has session in the rearview mirror, but a lot still ahead of him, our friend Todd Stacey, and not only with AlabamaDailyNews.com, with Inside Alabama Politics and Capital Journal. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. You know, I get pretty excited when IEP comes out.
Yeah, well, we've been needing to do a post-session kind of, you know, wrap-up, post-mortem, whatever you want to say. But, sometimes it takes a while to put all that together. We finally did, especially on the gambling issue and other things from the session. So I feel good about, pretty thorough issue today.
Yeah, so first of all, let's go to, this is in the email, and from Sunday, I think, and of course today, and people can read more on the story, the significance or insignificance of this vote for the Mercedes unionization, the fact that they voted against, 56% against unionizing, any takeaway there?
Hugely significant. I mean, you can't overstate what a big deal this was, and a bit of a surprise, at least for me, and I'll admit that.
Did you think it was going to go through?
I think so, and so I kind of explored a little bit of this in today's Inside Alabama Politics, because I was kind of saying, why were we surprised? Why were so many of us surprised? Why did the AP call it a stunning defeat? Things like that. And I think one is you had the Chattanooga plant, right? You had right next door,
yep.
Chattanooga, Volkswagen voted overwhelmingly to unionize. Well, it's not too far away. Different cultures and different companies, that's fine. But that just happened in February. And also in February, workers at Mercedes didn't vote, but a strong majority of workers turned in their cards to say, yes, we would like to at least explore unionization and we want to vote. And so when that happens, you've got to think, they got a pretty strong majority of people calling for a union vote. That might mean that they have enough for to actually form a union. So anyway, I guess that's why we were surprised. But, that all happened in February. So there were, 4 months or 3 months or so of work going on behind the scenes to kind of fight, right? The union's fighting for their side. You have, you know, Commerce Department, the governor, Business Council of Alabama, other groups fighting it from the other side, from the pro-business side, saying, no, this is not a good idea. And so ultimately, more workers were persuaded by that. But yeah, I think it was a surprise, but a huge win for Governor Ivey. And, you know, we've got Hyundai might be in Montgomery might be moving toward a unionization vote. The governor and BCA and everybody else has to feel pretty good about the momentum coming out of Mercedes.
But okay, this is just what people have told me, so you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that out of the, and I don't know, but the stats that the lowest hanging fruit was Mercedes, like they thought they had a better chance of getting unionized there than any of the other plants, that maybe Hyundai would be a harder thing, or what do you know, or what do you hear?
I've heard different things. I think a lot of it has to do with how aggressively the corporate leadership would actually fight unionization. You know, basically, you've got a German-owned company versus a Korean-owned company. Certainly, the Korean-owned company is in any case going to fight unionization, right? They're not going to just lay down and let it happen. Germany's a little different. Certainly, a European culture, a lot more amicable to unions. Maybe not the kind of unions like the UAW is, but they're a little more used to that. Plus, for Germany, as many times as Governor Kay Ivey was on the phone, with Mercedes leadership in Germany, so was the Biden administration. So was the pro-union, Biden administration encouraging them to, allow the union. So that's pretty tough. I do think that the Chattanooga vote and the card turnout at Mercedes was a wake-up call. It really got Mercedes leadership attention. They changed leadership. They replaced the CEO there in the Tuscaloosa plant, brought in new leadership, and that was clearly targeted to workers to tell them, listen, we are listening to your concerns. We are addressing your concerns. So things like that, addressing the temp worker issue, talking about how pay is going to be scaled. I think they may have started late in their response, but they caught up.
Yeah, it may be one of the best things for Alabama, actually, because you have the threat of unionization makes the company step up with these pay increases and different accommodations. At the same time, you don't end up having the union in place that would make it less competitive, and maybe Mercedes goes somewhere else to build their vehicles. So, I mean, it kind of a win.
Yeah, and that's important. I mean, I've heard a lot of these complaints from workers at both Hyundai and Mercedes, and a lot of them are legit. I mean, one of them is temp workers, an over-reliance on temp workers over the year. This has kind of crept in. And so, what that means is if you're hired as a temp worker, you're not getting the full benefits, the great job and the pay that these full-time, company employees do. And there was more and more an over-reliance on that. Well, that's not just a problem for the employees. That's a problem for the state. Right, when we spend all these economic incentive dollars recruiting these companies and helping fund their expansions and things like that, we're doing that and we're predicating that on direct jobs. Hire people, not staff it out to a temp agency. So that's certainly something the state has been harping on to these two companies and others. Because like you said, the best way to avoid a union takeover is to make sure you're doing right by your employees.
Do right. Yeah. Exactly. And I have kind of a nuanced view of unions. I can tell you stories that'll make them seem like the scourge, and I can make them seem like in other stories that they're are really important out there. It is interesting, though. You said German company, Mercedes, kind of that European socialism that they exist under, maybe they'd be more amicable to the idea of unionization.
Yes. Yeah. I hired weird lines, chance to chance a for the if any one of them for the if any weird but
Off because you can't afford that payroll. So
bingo.
There's a double-edged sword.
Just joining us, talking to Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News and Capital Journal. We'll get to just a review of gambling here in a second. But did you watch Shamari Figures on with Al Sharpton over the weekend? Did you get to see that?
I wasn't able to catch that, no.
Talking about kind of turnout as part of it, right? And, what had happened. Part of the conversation was about the unionization fail, and then was that indicative of where turnout would be for AL2? I don't know. I mean, I think this is just the start of Shamari Figures getting lots of screen time around the country, you know, and he's got a big presence here at AL2. But, I mean, that national money, he's going to be courting it if it isn't already coming to him.
Absolutely. There's going to be a ton of money in this race. In a couple of months, you're going to see this nationally talked about as one of the key national races for both parties. I think Democrats kind of went into it thinking, they got a really, really good shot, better than, average odds to take the seat. It's kind of evened up. And so both parties have an opportunity here, and they're good. They have good candidates, right? It's not like one is especially problematic,
right?
Or they're both going to be well funded, so it's going to be a heck of a race. But he's right about turnout. I mean, the only chance he has to win is if there's essentially improved turnout in the black community for Democrats. I mean, I could see that being undermined a little bit by increasing black support for Trump, but that declining black enthusiasm for Joe Biden is just an albatross around his neck. It is such a drag on his progress. So he's got to do something. I think you'll see people like Al Sharpton come to town, probably people like President Obama, some of those big-time Democratic names come into the district to try to boost turnout, try to get people to the polls, and a huge, huge GOTV operation that we've probably not seen in decades.
The Obama factor would be something that definitely would move the needle. The Sharpton, I don't know. If you're looking at younger black voters, I don't know how much they would get fired up for Sharpton or not, but we'll watch it. And before we wrap, too, you and I have talked about this a couple times, and I quote you because the previous session, not this one that just ended, but the one before, I've always keep pushing back. I had this big laugh where Governor Ivey said, well, she was disappointed that they had not gotten to gambling in that session, y'all. This is not this one that just ended, but the one before. And, you asked the question that got her to say that, which kind of made me laugh because I was like, where was she the whole session? Well, now, and you have it, and I think it's in Inside Alabama Politics, you were discussing the fact that Governor Ivey saying, why would she? The idea of there being a special session called makes no sense because I guess she feels like the votes aren't, there's no change in the votes out there. Why call the session?
Yeah, that's essentially what she said. And she was not shy about saying it, right? She just really stepped up and said, why would I do that? They clearly can't pass these pretty basic bills. And I think she's probably right. We've talked about before, in a special session that gives you advantages, it isolates the issue. You saw gambling this session. I mean, how much horse trading did you see just laid bare on the floor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Between that ag center and things like that, there were certainly things going on behind the scenes because, as the budgets are moving, as all these other bills are moving, you're trying to count votes on gambling. So if you take all that away and simply isolate it, I do think it becomes a lot easier. But I think she's probably right about the Senate. I mean, they worked over that Senate body again and again, and the votes at the end of the day just weren't there. Can somebody be persuaded to change their mind? Maybe, but it's really tough for me to identify who that person is and what it would take to get that person, you know, to switch their vote. I think the House was pretty close in what it designed in terms of sort of the goals of a gambling plan, but you've got plenty of senators who are just going to be no on anything that expands, period. And actually, that's what, you know, technically what came out of conference committee, but it was that video gambling, electronic gambling machines language, which I have no idea where that came from.
Gambling kiosk, man, is like, just go
yeah.
And put your card
so,
in.
I mean, so you got to think, if they had just stuck with the horse racing model.
Which is also silly, but okay.
Sure, but it's not the, you know.
Right.
AI-generated, you know, dealerless table games. You know, so like, you know, would the Porch Creek have opposed the bill? Yeah, I mean, they were kind of opposed to it the entire time. Would they have gone aggressively out of their way to kill it? I'm not sure. And so I'm not sure if all Britain's vote would have necessarily changed if that one thing wasn't in there.
Yeah,
everybody's scratching their head about that.
I want folks to sign up for IAP because they can get your breakdown on that. I know I had Senator Albritton talk to me about it, but and he laid it out, and you lay it out in IAP here too, that I think is important when people go, why didn't this happen? You know, you've just broke it down there where people could, you know, look at it. And I would say, you know, like we talked about last week, in this negotiation being the state, the legacy dog tracks, and PCI, the people whose larders are full, their cupboard is full, they can wait out the storm, it's PCI. Everybody else has got to have something right now. PCI doesn't have to have something right now. They're doing all right.
Well, that's exactly right. And they, you know, they, of course, got a lot of talk aimed their way of, like, you know, why'd you kill this bill? Why'd you kill this bill? Look, it's not their job to look out for other casinos' interests.
Correct.
Right?
I understand their position. People can get frustrated, but I understand. I mean, if I was in their shoes, I'd do the same dang thing.
Yeah. Look, if you just give six other casinos statewide essentially table games, that hurts your competitive position. So why would anybody want to be with that, you know, want to be for that? So I wasn't surprised at all. But, you know, when it comes to gambling, people get really worked up. It becomes an emotional issue. And so hopefully a lot of that dust has settled. But, you know, another year, another gambling bill goes to die.
There it is. Todd, people want to get more of this discussion. First of all, I know you say it is kind of for political nerds, but you know what? You're talking to a political nerd audience. So if they want to sign up for this Inside Alabama Politics, I'm always talking about, how do they do that?
Yeah, so all it is, you know, for almost 40 years now, Inside Alabama Politics has existed. It came under Alabama Daily News about 5 years ago. And so about every month, sometimes twice a month, we published all the inside scoop about what's happening in the state. But it's for subscribers only, for paid subscribers only. So become an insider, subscribe to that. It's about $9 a month. And you'll be glad you did.
Right.
ALDailyNews.com.
It's good stuff. And Capital Journal Friday, right?
Fridays at 7:30, Sundays at noon.
Good stuff, Todd. Rest up, man. We'll talk again next week.
All right, Sean. Be good.
All right. There goes Todd Stacey. We're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right at 12:28, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. I'm still stuck on looking at Michael's pictures from the Wooden Boat Show. I know my nephew went down. He was trying to tempt me into going. He said, man, wooden boats and beer. I was like, oh, my gosh. I'd like to do that. All right. David on the text line. Question of the day is, would Obama get a bigger crowd at Ladd People's Stadium in 2024 than Trump got in 2015? I would say no. And without even thinking about it, I would say no. But if you want to look, I mean, you know, when Todd said, well, you'll see people coming in to get out the vote in AL2 for Shamari Figures, you know, Al Sharpton or former President Obama. Former President Obama will move the needle for sure. I don't think that Al Sharpton would. I don't know that people would go see. I don't know if you could fill up the Civic Center to go see Al Sharpton. Let's see. And this unnamed texter, I get not having a special session if you're off by a lot of votes, but there was just one vote. I would think that's when you would have a special session. And it is just one vote, but you wonder if, I don't know this unnamed texter, I don't know, but sometimes people vote yes if they know it's good, that it ends up being a no, right? If you're not the vote that's necessary, you can vote one way even though you want another outcome. I don't know that there were members of the legislature that did that, but if you go back into a special, you may see some of those yeses pull back. We'll see. We'll watch it. It may happen. My buddy John Young, Men United Against Violence, joins us next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Monday. And good to see not only my buddy John Young, but also Drew Forward in studio for Men United Against Violence. And you heard it in some of the newscasts here on the station, but it has not, carried the weight that it should, that yet another violent weekend, a murderous weekend for Mobile, of course, stemming off the murderous rampage that happened in Baldwin County. And here we sit, and the numbers continue. John, you told me how many?
There are seven this month.
Get you close to that mic. There you go.
How's this? Seven this month.
Seven this month.
In Mobile.
Seven.
Four of those are criminal investigations, and three will be presented to grand jury. But where's the outrage? When I called you Saturday, I was hot.
You were hot. You were.
And I told you I'd still be angry today, and I am angry because over the weekend we have shooting into occupied vehicles, and homes, and a third suspect in the shooting in Stockton that wounded 18 and killed three. And I'm still angry because no one else is angry. Where are all of these social justice warriors who stand up? What do you think is going to happen when a violent person has contact with police? You're going to have another violent incident. We aren't talking enough about preventing it. Where's the outrage for this 37-year-old black woman killed by a black man, mother of three in Stockton?
And this shooting, we'll come back to Mobile, but the shooting in Stockton, to know, even if there was somebody there they wanted to shoot, which is a whole other discussion that I still have a problem with. But you would shoot into a crowd of people that you have no way to know who those people are,
right?
And you're just shooting them.
Right. And
you're just shooting
and
them.
And the callousness to have black shooters shooting into a crowd of black people.
Yeah.
How can that be racism? How do we always end up with blaming racism and police for these ills in these communities? And looking at the photographs, there was nothing behind their eyes. The suspect pictures on the news, they were empty. They had no remorse. How are we breeding such cold, callous killers? Aren't we fascinated in that? Aren't we fascinated to learn what is the commonality that these black men are either defending their lives against black men or willing to take the life of a black man without hesitation? Those are just murders, Drew. We're not talking about black men who've been shot and assaulted, robbed.
Yes.
We're not talking about black women who've been beaten. Just homicides this year.
You know, you mentioned this, and you and I have talked personally about this. What gets pushed off, too, are injuries. Like, people are like, well, three are killed, and then they say, well, the 15, they're injured.
Right.
Y'all know in y'all's world what people who deal with that stuff lifelong. I know one person who had a gunshot injury that the idea that, they just got shot and it's like a movie where they stitched them up and, all right, Sarge, I'm going back
slap out. Slap iron to it.
Yeah.
No, 19-year-olds with colonoscopy bags, 20-year-olds paralyzed. You know you can't never have the pleasure of a woman when you're paralyzed at 20. Your friends stop coming around after the first month their tattoo ink dries.
That's right.
They stop visiting mom when you're dead and it's 3 months later. I bet no one's visiting the deceased parents of these kids.
Nope.
Where's the outrage? If we can fund an investigation into the police department for violent contact with known criminals, aren't we even a little curious about why black men find it so easy to use violence, Drew?
Jay, why the outrage is clearly selective, right? Because if the police come into contact with a violent offender and they do something to him during that altercation, then the outrage is massive, right? We have people coming from out of town, getting on the news, making all sorts of noise about that. But when we, it's right here in our backyard with people that we live with, we live among them, right? And they hurt one another, and it's par for the course.
Oh, that's just what black folks do.
It's just what it is.
Well,
it's
so, and I've even heard when Michael Moore was killed several years ago, someone even said, oh, it's one thing if he died in the drug game, but when a police officer takes his life, what kind of I'm not allowed to say sometimes the colorful metaphors I want to
that's
use
right,
on air.
I gotta keep my license.
Right, but the hypocritical nature of some of the things that people say in defense of this nonsense. It's okay when black folks, and have we become so callous? Then I have to believe that the people who say they care really don't. I think it's just a campaign slogan.
And does Benjamin Crump care about the death of a black man if he doesn't see dollar signs associated with it?
No.
You know,
there's no paycheck associated with the black woman that was killed in Stockton.
No.
There's no paycheck associated with the 19-year-old that was shot and killed in Mobile. There's no paycheck associated with the 7 deaths this month. Mm-hmm. 20 total for the month. 25 every month? We aren't curious. Drew, we're not even fascinated. What? I'll bet a PhD candidate at South Alabama has already done the study. I'll bet someone already has analyzed the numbers, the statistics involving black-on-black crime or all crime, which is still 90% violent crime committed by black people against black people. I'll bet it's already done. But the people who make money off of it, these alphabet organizations who are funded by it, they don't have any interest in solving the problem because they'll work their way out of a job. And we've solved current issues, Drew, they don't have a problem with dragging up something from the past. We went from slaves to white supremacy, and they leapt all over the civil rights movement, the right to vote, the right to move where you want, the black president, a black speaker of the house. They've leapt all over. We went from being slaves to now white supremacy. And you show me systemic racism in these failing black schools. You show me systemic racism in black neighborhoods held hostage by drug dealers.
Especially when the politicians above those neighborhoods, the ones, they're black too, right?
Right.
The teachers in those failing black schools, guess what most of them are?
Black.
They're black as well. What about the administration there, the principal?
Right.
So if it's all racism, JY, then how in the world are all of these black people working in those communities and still you get the same type of result?
Because the home is broken. We refuse to point the finger where it should be pointed first. We talk about outcomes, Sean, and when I had my tirade with you Saturday, we always talk about the outcome. Violent individuals come into contact with police and are shot. Oh, suddenly he was a good boy. You knew your son was a crackhead. Oh, he was a good boy. You know your son's selling drugs out of your house. Right. Oh, they didn't have to do her like that. You know she's violent and uncontrollable. You can't even control her. But as soon as they have a negative contact, it suddenly becomes someone else's fault.
Right.
No, you're raising these degenerates. They're born in these circumstances, in these cultures, and I'm tired of them getting a pass. Sean, it is embarrassing to have constantly hear how infantile and weak and needy black folks are. Listen, and I know someone out there is listening now saying they're preaching to the choir. Where choirs is choir members are sinners too. They need to be reminded too. They're at church for a reason. Now, not just to sing, they need to hear the message too. So don't give me that junk about, well, we already know. Well, tell it. Be bold enough to go out and say it then. Don't give me this junk anymore about people being afraid to call. What names do you think Drew and I have been called? Can you imagine? Come on now. We've gotten past the point where we can play nice about this junk, right?
Yeah. I think it does. It does demand more people say exactly what we're sitting here saying, is that 8 black men are dead, and black men have shot these black men, right? I mean, you can say it. It's what happened. So you can just talk about that outcome, or you can go, how the heck do we keep this from happening?
Right.
Correct.
Why don't we talk about...
Right? I mean, if anything else in society, you have this, you go, we're going to have... I mean, it should be like the Manhattan Project. You know, we had to figure out how to make the bomb to stop the Nazis. Right. Okay, get everybody on the same... Okay, so how do we stop... Listen, since the Bible, there's always going to be violence. But this, we have to mitigate. We cannot live in a world like this where... It's not even news sometimes when black people shoot black people. It makes the news, but it's like, oh, hey, well, that's just, you know, it's another, you know, black on black crime. Move on.
The idea is, once again, it starts at the house. It starts with parents, right? We have to raise our children. We have to teach them to be better people, right? Because we can't leave kids to their own devices.
No.
When fathers are not in the home, guess what? They're going to find the father figure, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to find someone that's going to give them that that environment that they look for, because children are going to need structure, right? So young men are going to go out and they're going to find it, whether it be with their father and their mother at home or whether it be in the street, but they're going to get structure from somewhere.
Yeah, and I think, you know, John and I, being the old guys here, talk about the, you know, when we were young, that we have one set of modeling coming from our fathers, from our family. And yes, I didn't exactly spend all my time in Sunday school. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But you had this tether to what was right. You'd swing out away from it a little bit and tetherball come back. And, you know, you had something anchored to you going, yeah, this is too far. This is not right.
Even when you did wrong, you knew it was wrong. And no one made an excuse for it. We knew when we went and got that bottle of Mad Dog from the tent store in the terrace, we knew what would happen if we got caught.
Yes.
And everybody in Hillsdale know exactly what I'm talking about. My older brother and I, we gave my parents fits. We took turns. Right? But at least we can say we made our own choices. We may not have always done right, but we knew it was wrong.
But you had that
right.
You had that baseline,
right,
of what and
raise a child in the way and they'll return.
Correct. Right. And y'all said this before too, that we got to tackle this younger than the people we're talking about here. A 17-year-old, 18-year-old. Sometimes these guys are too. I mean, everybody is redeemable, but it's a harder job than getting somebody a kid who's 10, 11, right, 9, 10, 11, and they're. And making sure they have that, because that's before all the other, although I guess with media, all the other forces are in their ear. You can kind of set that baseline with
right.
them.
Our winter campaign was A Child's Future Begins at Home. And Sean, we thank you for being a member and thank you for always having us on to promote it. But we were pointing that out. A child's future begins at home. The foundation for what that child will become starts at home. That's not to say that you can be a great parent and go to church and have dinner together, that there's a 100% guarantee, but you improve the chances of your child leading a successful non-criminal life.
Yes.
Drew, we used to say, don't commit crimes. Don't go where crimes are committed. Don't associate with people who commit crimes. And if all
and
else...
guess what? You don't have interactions with police.
A wise man told me that. 99.9% likelihood that you do not have negative contact with police. And Drew, if nothing else, don't embarrass the family. You were taught that.
Correct. Absolutely. And, you know, the idea that if you don't have that family structure, right, if you don't have someone to reel you in, just like you were talking about, then, of course, it makes it so much easier for someone to go out there and do what they shouldn't do. But I didn't want to embarrass my mother. I didn't want to embarrass my father. So I couldn't go out and just do, you know, something willy-nilly like that. I couldn't just go out there and commit a crime.
Because there's a baseline established.
Right.
And we're all very lucky. We obviously had good upbringings, all of us. We had a baseline that even though we come back to that baseline. If you don't have a baseline, you keep setting a new, this is now the new normal. This is acceptable. Right. Now this is, because there was no baseline to come back to.
And we keep making excuses for bad behavior. We keep saying it's not the child's fault that they don't go to school and sit down and shut up. We have to dumb down the curriculum so they can pass. It's not the school, it's not the parents' fault that their children don't come to school fed and bathed and clothed. Listen, poor people, I'm not blaming poverty. I was poor for a while. After my parents divorced, we spent 2 years with my mother and we were poor on Wisconsin Avenue. We were poor. I never thought about breaking into my neighbor's house.
Right.
I never thought about stealing from Miss Johnson down the street or boot nanny across the street. It never crossed our minds because we were raised, don't take things from people.
Don't take something that's not yours.
So now we're conditioning young black boys and black girls that their choices is not their fault. They're irresponsible for everything, white racism, systemic racism, and slavery. And the only thing that's going to solve your problems is reparation. Drew, I tell you this. If they handed out $1 million checks for reparations, don't stand in between me and the bank. But there are some people, if you give them $1 million, all you'll do is have $1 million drug dealer or $1 million crackhead. That's the foundation is at home.
Okay, coming right back. More with Drew and John, Men United Against Violence, right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:50 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile, and good to have. It's good because I love seeing these men, John Young and Drew Ford, with Men United Against Violence. Problem is, what has them back in studios? What we seem to not be addressing. Y'all are addressing. Men United Against Violence are addressing, but somebody's missing the message here.
It's the people that have the loudest voices, the same people that show up to the council meetings every week and decry how terrible and racist the police department is, the people that have the Facebook pages, the people receiving federal money, the alphabet organizations. They have the platforms that people listen to. I spoke at a church a month ago, and we don't want anybody to think we change our message because of the audience. We tell this message to anyone, anywhere, anytime. If you want
the same guys everywhere you go.
Everywhere we go. Yeah. We'll debate anyone. We'll meet anyone wherever you want us to meet us. I spoke at a church maybe 3 weeks ago, Isaiah 53 Church on Moffitt Road, and told them the same thing, the exact same message. And they hugged me and took pictures with me. It isn't the majority of people that disagree with us. The people who disagree with us are making the money off of it. They stand to gain from it, whether it's political clout or if it's financial funding. But we need the people that have the loudest voices. We've gone to council meetings and appealed to them. Hey, support our campaign. Give us a thumbs up on Facebook. Take a picture of our billboards. Why do you do billboards? Well, it's like advertising, right?
Yeah.
If they weren't selling cars using billboards, how many attorneys' billboards did you see up? You know, so billboards work, right? But we still need it promoted. Well, we don't have any money. Like, we have about $1,100 or $1,200 left, enough for our summer campaign. But we're not in it for the money. We're in it for the message to actually change lives. Drew, we're tired. Listen, if there were 7 fatalities at Cottage Hill and Hillcrest.
Yes, let's talk. Let's do that. Let's do the fun thing. Let's do this. So we've got 7 white people. Let's do 7 white people. Right. For those people who don't. 7 white people dead from other white people in shootings.
People would demand to know why.
Correct.
They would be screaming from the mountaintops.
They'd be down at the city council saying, you get this under control.
Right.
You get it.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, that's real.
And so, and that goes to say, Drew, that we are the black misleadership class has become the default spokespeople for an entire population, and they aren't being honest, are they?
And the question, I wonder why it is that within the black community we have such a disconnect between the community and law enforcement when it comes to just trying to stamp out violence within your own neighborhood.
right?
Because
trying to make sure that black people don't get killed.
Right. I mean,
correct.
What a concept.
Because let's say it was a shooting in the middle of a white neighborhood, we would have witnesses coming out from the woodworks trying to say, this is what I saw. I've got this. I've got that. Right. Let me help out. Let me do something to get this under control. Right?
Is it that it just culturally not going to do it, or is it the fear of repercussion?
It's culturally not going to do it. It changed with gangster rap when the snitching came in. Remember, this wasn't always the way we grew up.
Right.
Even when we grew up, Sean, that's and correct. Drew's 10 years younger than we are. Next month, you'll be 43.
Young man, yes.
But it wasn't always this way. Parents used to turn their kids in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got a buddy that skipped school, and his dad took him back to school.
Mm-hmm. I'm familiar
with that. we know who we're talking about, don't we? So it hasn't always been this way, but with the promotion of single-parent homes, with the promotion of broken families, with the promotion of rap culture that has hijacked an entire race and ethnic group, this is what we're left with. It is expected that a woman is supposed to have child out of wedlock, right? Mm-hmm. It's expected that a boy will have kids all over the neighborhood. The drug dealer now is held up as the hero and as the person you should emulate. We used to hate drug dealers. You know, one of the greatest scourges on black people was the crack cocaine epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And who was selling crack to black people? Other black people. Who's shooting black people? Other black people. Who's making up babies with a bunch of women and not taking care of them? Other black people. So the problems within that subculture.
So why do we have this narrative, this idea? Now, I've heard this on the news multiple times where they'll say, oh, well, white supremacy is the greatest threat to democracy.
Yeah,
right?
So that's the new thing, coming out of national politics. It's white supremacy. white nationalism, you know, or whatever it's called there. Yeah.
Right. And I'm looking around going, where are all these white people yeah. running around killing people at? Where is that?
I tell you what, I'm going to use some of my affirmative action. Sean, you use your white supremacy.
Okay.
And let's take that to the bank and see how much, who's going to give us a darn bank loan. They're going to ask us for our credit score.
That's correct.
You know, I've lived around poor white people, and they wish they had some white privilege.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I've lived with neighbors whose cars was 20 years old. Mm-hmm. And we would get together and grill out in the courtyard and talk about problems. And they were worse. I could run my air conditioner. There was a couple behind me that could not run their air during the summer. They couldn't afford it in Mobile.
Right.
Don't talk this crazy. That's just deflection. It's not taking self-responsibility. And nowadays, every time we say this to a young black boy, a young black girl, regardless of what you do, when the police show up, they ain't had to do that to you. That's just setting up the next phase for the next person to do it. Everybody wants that check, and they don't care how they get it. At what cost? At what cost?
Well, we're seeing it. Lives.
Yep.
That's a cost. I mean, a fatal cost.
And so we know who's selling drugs, but he's a hero when the police show up. We know who's these guys that are selling drugs and shooting into houses. But what do you think is going to happen when a violent person has contact with the police?
But is that part of the problem, though? That's what I'm saying. This fear that when the police, you and I have talked about this plenty, but I know I've talked about it in the past from the sheriff's department, the police department. Is there a real fear that if somebody gives information, now I know we have the anonymous stuff, but is that part of it?
Could no fear of it, Drew. No. That's just the mindset. This nonsense has been preached for 30 years, and it's just recited. Same thing calling yourself the N-word, calling yourself a thug, or women calling themselves B. No, there's no fear of repercussions of anybody, right?
No. There's not any fear in it. Matter of fact, I mean, I can't think of a situation where anybody was ever retaliated against when it comes to them cooperating with police. I've never even heard of it.
Okay, I'm just have to ask
because
people will say that that's they'll say, well, that's the reason people aren't reporting.
It's all part of the excuse making, the narrative, telling black people how hopeless and helpless we are. Listen, all to your white listeners, there's no such thing as white supremacy. The income gap is not between black folks and white folks. It's internal. Am I earning more money now than 10 years ago? I don't care how much money Sean Sullivan earns. That has nothing. I'm not trying to catch up with him. Right.
But that's because you take responsibility for yourself. Right.
Right.
It's really just that simple. Self accountability. Because if you compared yourself to Bill Gates, I mean,
right. Or my brother. Yeah. You know,
exactly. What good would that do?
Right. Men aren't even equal to themselves over their lifetime.
Exactly.
How the heck can you be equal to somebody you don't know? I'm calling out the hypocrisy. You know who you are. You know who the liars are. You know if you're lying. Mobilians, let's stop letting them lie to us.
Can y'all do this? Because we're close up against the break, but I got questions for you. Can you hang on?
Sure can.
Okay,
sure.
Because we y'all and
absolutely.
And people asking too, just right now. We'll visit this again. So the summer campaign. How can they help on the summer campaign?
When we announce it, show up. We're going to announce a billboard, Sean. You've been to a couple of them. When we decide on what our campaign slogan is, you always bring us back on. We do our media tour announcing it. Just show up and stand shoulder to shoulder with men who don't look like you from different backgrounds, different income levels, and say, we are men, we love our families, and we love our community. Right, Drew?
For sure.
Yeah, and to answer Pat there, because Pat said we can go to all the rallies and public appearances, but the moment you get off stage and put the white guy on stage, stuff gets wild. I don't know. I've been plenty of white guys at these events, too.
Right.
What are they saying, that white people don't show up?
Yeah, he said if you put them on stage, and then it's not a good thing.
That's a perfect thing, as long as you're telling the truth.
Bingo. All right, be right back.